Let us view the prospect from the freedom of spirit in which there is no fear, no failure, only a seemingly endless projection of wonder opening out of wonder. Could an all-powerful God of love do less for his children, so dear to him? It all comes back to that: if you believe in God, you must submit to his will, you must not try and make him conform to your limited outlook. A century of evolution at its present rate is not comparable to 1 hour of the goodly experience I am about to show you. It will be the same earth, but with that omitted that was never intended to be, an earth of surpassing beauty and charm, in which the demands of the lower self will be sublimated by the emergence into consciousness of spiritual power within each human soul. Ayo, try and think of your present world with all the principal causes of strife and fear and opposition removed. A world in which there can be little insecurity of life and limb that cannot readily be put right. How would such a world appeal to you? A smile flickered over the loved features of my companion as he spoke. I knew he was trying to educate my mind to these novel conceptions, to raise my consciousness so that the scenes I was about to witness should not come as too great a shock to my sensibilities. Ayo, think it would be a wonderful experience, eh? I replied solemnly. I knew somehow that it was going to be difficult to abandon the reliance upon an existing order of physics which had for so long excluded the need for doubt. Ayo, no, you will say that man's condition will be different, but somehow I feel that something will have gone out of his life, there will be something missing. Azeros nodded in agreement. Ayo, to you, yes, who are equipped with a mentality specifically designed to enable you to exist in a combative environment. But suppose you no longer regarded the product of your labor with the satisfaction born of the effort you had to make. Suppose someone came along and produced the same result with a fraction of the effort, would you still feel pride in your achievements, or would you express envy? With a laugh I agreed that I should be consumed with envy. Ayo, and I should soon be intolerant of the effort I had made to accomplish the same result. I continued. Ayo, quite see that I shall have to stand right outside of time, as we know it, in order to comprehend what is meant by the world of the future. But it is strange to think that our clumsy old world is to change from a three-dimensional life to what must be nearer the fourth dimension. Azeros confirmed this when he said, Ayo, in the age we are about to visit, man will have transcended many of the limitations that make his life so burdensome at present. Now he has to labor hard to think out his projects, assemble the labor and materials, often at great cost, and then produce with great effort. Can you lift your thoughts to an era when many of these intermediary processes can be short-circuited? Already you are beginning to do so, but imagine creation by the power of concentrated will. Ayo, you know very little about atomic fission. Matter is not so defiantly cohesive that only the application of heat or pressure can bring about a molecular change. If you are careless, you can turn your Sunday joint into carbon with ease. But supposing you could bring about such changes by simple concentration of the will upon the atoms of an object or material, and holding the thought of the change you wished to bring about. Such atoms can be controlled, and it is only the supreme conceit of your scientists that would make them ridicule such a suggestion. Ayo, the artisan of the future will assemble the necessary elements, if necessary from the atmosphere, by the power of thought alone, sometimes by the concentrated power of many minds, and then fashion them into the desired shape by the same process. Do you not see that much of your machinery will thus become unnecessary? The production of all your needs will be so simple that you will have ample leisure for other pursuits, and indeed one of your future problems will be the most suitable way of employing that leisure. But first you will have to get rid of many inhibitions and fixed ideas. Ayo, again, man will not have to reason out his problems on a hit or miss method. His intuitive sense of what is right will develop so rapidly in the rarer atmosphere that he will be able to form proper conclusions without difficulty. He will have his own private oracle, as it were. And discoveries such as you have never dreamed of will await your attention. And above all, man's basic nature will have been lifted above the level where hitherto it had been his master. He will know the truth, and truth shall make him free. But remember that truth is an infinite quality, you can never plumb its depths. Therein lies its fascination. A once again I was unprepared for what met my gaze as I opened my eyes upon a scene so far into the distant future that it seemed as if time itself had been transcended. I could not help comparing the lovely land spread out before me with that of ancient Atlantis. There was the same faint unreality about the whole aspect which had characterized our first view of that wonderful land. Yet there was a livingness in all I saw that dispelled any idea of a synthetic creation. And gradually I began to detect a difference which I find it hard to describe. Could I say that this land had, as it were, grown up, while Atlantis was beautiful but immature? One felt very close to creation here and very conscious of its goodness and of its lovableness. I reached out to touch a flower resplendent with vivid color, and to my astonishment it leant caressingly towards me. For the life of me I could not have picked it. Zeros and I moved across the undulating country with our accustomed swiftness. The people we encountered were handsome, and that goes without saying, for there was a radiance about them which spoke of their innate goodness. One could hardly ascribe to them any negative qualities. Though there was sameness in the kind of clothing they wore, it was some inequality each possessed that made differentiation easy. I gathered that these wonderful people had a very high standard of thought and deed, by contrast with our own, yet they were by no means of a common level in their moral or intellectual being. The need for education in these qualities was still essential. All this progress had been made possible by the gradual and continuous raising of the gravitational density of the Earth, which, among other results, had affected the bloodstream of humans and animals considerably, not to mention the flora and the minerals of the soil. Although I saw a number of people who were elderly in a distinguished sort of way, I did not observe any who were careworn or deficient in their faculties. Nor did I notice any cripples or sick persons, evidence of a guilty civilization. It was true, what Zeros had told me, that thought creation had almost superseded machines and manual labor. And such is the effect of human nature that when abundance was provided, demands sank to a much lower level. Everything needful for happy and peaceful existence was at hand, without the pressing need to hoard against threats or other adversity. So where was the need to conserve abundance? It is difficult for us, with our many preoccupations and need for constant labor and provision, to contemplate an existence from which it seems all the spice of life has been removed. But I recalled that Zeros had assured me that man's fighting instincts would dissipate with the need for their use, to be replaced by a more contemplative and infinitely more effective attitude of mind. We know so little of the power of thought, though we are beginning to compute its effects on our lives. No doubt the greater knowledge had to be withheld, for obviously we should have misused it. And after all, divine creation is just what I was witnessing in this advanced culture. It was the realization of their divine nature that enabled these clever people to employ the same creative principles to their needs. In this world of the future, it was clear that the need for a density of environment sufficient to hamper the expression of extreme negative impulses no longer existed, and so the environment could be lightened, as it were, to allow more freedom of spiritual power and more knowledge of its potential uses. I could not help thinking that already we are reckoning in terms of life on other planets entirely out of focus with that of our own. Our one-time conceit that we were the only form of intelligent life in the universe is slowly evaporating. In a universe that is obviously manifested out of the thought of the Creator, it is surely reasonable to say that thought creation should extend into every phase of its manifestation, wherever it is found. Thus it is that the men of the future will subject materials to an intense mental bombardment until their atomic structure comes under its influence and assumes the desired form. Zeros and I moved over great portions of this strange land, observing its many features, many unfamiliar but all in accordance with some principle of beauty. At length we perceived on the distant horizon what I can only describe as a dream city. It was not so much the elegance of the architecture which held our attention as we drew nearer, but in some queer way the appeal was to the aesthetic sense. While the city of the Golden Gates in Atlantis radiated its own beauty of form and color, it was more in the form of a divine example, a single expression of godly form, supreme throughout the land. But here I found myself possessed with the idea of fulfillment. It seemed that the ultimate in creative design had been reached. I can imagine nothing beyond this superb example of what a city might be when lifted above the purely functional. And we later found that this was but one of many. The only building which holds, for me, any comparison with this subtle distinction is the Taj Mahal at Agra in India, a mausoleum built out of the suffering of a broken heart. To stand close to its great dome and towering minarets is to realize its great size. Yet to stand a few hundred yards away and view it in the light of a full moon, is to be transported to another world. It is so perfectly proportioned that its size ceases to have any meaning. One feels that outstretched hands could take it in their grasp. Itself in beauty tugs at the heartstrings, as if the suffering that gave it birth emanated from the very marble of which it is built. I wish I could convey some idea of the entrancing beauty and sense of meaning that was inherent in this lovely city. It was there, radiating from the very materials of which it was constructed, yet I could write no more of its real meaning than I could of some exotic scent from a bottle. No harsh contrast was visible, every detail seemed to dovetail into every other. There were no walls to this open city and it seemed to welcome visitors along its broad avenues. I noticed that there were no embellishments or ornamentation on the buildings, no hint of ostentation, no suggestion of personality. Nothing to distract from the sheer beauty of line and color and design in its most perfect form. Here and there were fountains quietly splashing crystal clear water, not to quench an imaginary thirst but to give depth to the sense of quietude and peace. In fact, tranquility seemed to be the keynote of all we saw. Trees and shrubs, plants and flowers, abounded, seeming to bloom eternally. The whole atmosphere seemed to be designed to appeal to the soul rather than to an intellectual sense, offering an appeal that could not be resisted. It was the perfect hospitality. I felt that here I could assuage all the inarticulate longings that had ever struggled for expression in my life. It was clear that there could be no inequality or inferiority in this dream city, no uptown or downtown, no privileged preserve or expression of possessiveness. It had the true communal air about it which could owe allegiance only to the highest source of all. As we wandered down the vistas, I could not call them streets, I noticed there were stalls of fruits and other commodities, unattended, from which I suppose one could help oneself. I could imagine that very little food was required to sustain life in this rarefied atmosphere, which itself held much of the forces which the body required and drew through inhalation. Perhaps because of my constant stream of questions, Zeros led me to a large building which we found to be a vast library. Room after room was filled with books and there were many objects forming a fair-sized museum. Most were in a language beyond my understanding, but after much search Zeros found me a book which proved to be a child's encyclopedia, in a language somewhat resembling English. As I glanced through the pages and studied the illustrations, I became aware of a peculiar quality about the words. They seemed to attune my mind to that of the writer so that I comprehended what he was trying to convey much better than through the mere words. This textbook of the future child, elementary matter no doubt to adults of that period, was an eye-opener to me. I found it fascinating. What would be beyond the grasp of our most brilliant minds seemed to be simple to these young people. I knew nothing of their history or standards or culture, but it seemed certain that they had been born with a brain capacity far in advance of our own. I was amused to find pictures of appliances of our own day shown as examples of an outmoded existence. There were Hogarthian pictures of worthy citizens consuming vast quantities of meat, traveling in slow boxes called motor cars which collided with each other and ran people down, and in aeroplanes which sometimes fell out of the sky. Warfare was dismissed in a few horrified sentences as we might deal with slavery. Later I came upon a description of the new industrial revolution, when man overcame the machine and then found means of disposing of the machine altogether. Human senses began to respond to an infinitely wider range of tone values, in all forms of art, of music, of design. Gradually men drew closer to other coincidental worlds and established contact with them. There appeared to be a series of natural catastrophes that broke the tension which had held the material world inviolate from the spiritual worlds, and this allowed a new stream of benignant influence to enter and transform the world of matter. With the heightening of man's sensibility and the increasing vibration of the earth itself, the actual soil underwent a change so that crops increased in speed of fruition and quality of produce. New forms of comestibles appeared. In the sequence of events I read that man began to know himself for what he is, and this knowledge engendered many changes in his habits and outlook. He ceased to eat meat and turned to the direct produce of the soil for his sustenance, and with this change his desires for great quantities of food subsided. The currents of man's whole life were to a great measure reversed. In this way man and his environment rose in condition until they became a whole stage higher than before. The elemental life which had been caring for vegetable growth came under the benign influence and was able to encourage new species and new spores from existing stocks, far better suited to man's new needs than their prototypes. Nor was this change limited to food production, for the cold intellectual outlook of humanity which derived from the crystalline nature of the mineral kingdom upon which man had lavished his interest, softened as the vibrations of the very soil quickened. From the unsympathetic rock and the brilliant hardness of the diamond he had drawn his brittle outlook, which could see only in terms of physics. His growing knowledge of metallurgy tended to smother the roundness of his inherent creative ability. Such distortions had isolated his intellect from the softening illumination of love, the power which was the theme of all creation. Thus he had lost his appreciation of divinity and squandered his spiritual heritage. But now he began to give back that hard core of his thinking to the kingdom from which he had drawn it, which involved a surrender of his self-will. Divine life began to flow in his veins once more. All this, and much more, became clear to me as I stood reading this fascinating record of man's resurgence. Through the magic of the words my mind absorbed much more than this meager reconstruction could convey. There was so much mysticism in what I learned that mere words can never reproduce it. In a sudden revelation it came to me how very close we are to this complete change of life, and yet how far. It needs only a change of heart, an infusion of the divine essence of love into the soul of man, for a whole reversal of man's way of life, his attitude towards his fellows, and for the subjugation of his negative impulses. It requires only a working majority to experience this uplift for the whole to be transformed. It could happen overnight. We stand closer to it than we know, yet fear holds us spellbound. Even the mightiest nations feel insecure. A fatal despair holds us immobile. Many feel the position to be hopeless and drug their minds with the pursuit of pleasure. Yet it is possible to postulate the means by which this change of heart might be initiated, for the desire, the longing, is there. Never before in the known history of our world has there been such a longing for spiritual enlightenment. Though it is dominated by the massive clouds of cruelty, oppression, distrust and fear, it is there, flowing strongly below the surface. First we must know what we are, in which case our doctrinal teaching needs overhauling. Then must come the realization of the survival of the human soul, and all that that implies. And because no such realization could endure did it not rest upon eternal verities, it is clear that survival implies pre-existence. With this would come the knowledge that while we are all brothers in spirit, we are not necessarily born equal, a conclusion which, under the law of love, imposes responsibilities upon those with greater capabilities. Next would come a new insight into the nature of matter, of the natural world, and the interrelationship of the many planetary forces that go to the mechanism of the universe. There is an immense field for research here, with fascinating possibilities. For to understand these forces is halfway to bringing them under control. From all this would be born a new wonder at the immensity and splendor of what we call God, for surely no research of such imponderables could be profitable without recognition of the source and inspiration of them all. Soon we should be able to accept as reasonable and normal the immanence of other worlds and conditions coincident to our own, and the existence of forms of life in our own environment upon whose cooperation and activities we should have to reckon. Finally, we should be able to look back down the vistas of time and visualize something of the immense story of man's resurgence from the pit into which man, and that includes ourselves, had fallen, and the wondrous love of God which had engineered our recovery through ages of benign influence acting upon our defiant free will. If we can build up that inspiring picture of the past, we can surely trace the progress of the future, the preordained flight into the promised land which has been kept inviolate against our return to its joys. I broke off my reverie, for there were unmistakable signs of weakness which meant that I must return to my inert physical body. I looked out of the window and tried to fix in my mind the wonderful changes that must have occurred as that strong wave of regeneration swept over the men and women of the future to give them their first faint recognition of what they had lost for so long. Surely at this time the masculine element in humanity must have shone forth to meet the feminine element in its whole being, a divine proposal for their reunion in a spiritual remarriage of souls. From the distant peaks of time, from the mighty mountains of spirit, must the love call have echoed through the vaults of space, hailing the demolition of separation, inviting men and women to the glorious consummation of their selfless love. None who were ready could fail to hear it. Surely now the glorious voices of the sons of the morning must be rejoicing at the approaching end of the long, long saga of redemption, shouting together that lovely angelus whose chimes ring out, "Ao, you and I and my Father are one. Amen and Amen." 8 Chapter 15, Ethereal Earth. Ao, as above so below, that which has been shall be again. A from an ancient prophecy. How shall I begin to describe what we experienced on our last visit into the future, a condition so utterly divorced from anything anyone has ever imagined that I can scarcely find words in which to express what little I can recall. I would need to set a little lamp behind each word which appears in cold print in order to illumine them all to something approaching their real meaning. Zeros had warned me that this flight out of time would be our last, that his mission was drawing to a close and soon he would be leaving me to digest and record the tremendous experiences he had brought within my reach. But he promised that although he would no longer be making objective appearances in my study, he would continue to inspire and enlighten my efforts to translate those experiences into readable form. Only since I have attempted that task have I realized to the full how difficult it would prove to be. Thus my anxiety increased as I realized how soon he was to depart from conscious contact with me, and I recalled how much I still wanted to know. However, I was more than thankful that I was to have the unseen guidance of my dear friend in the days that lay ahead, how to translate the reality of those ephemeral experiences into words which did not rob them of any coherent meaning. I had grown to admire and to love this being of such deep wisdom and knowledge, yet who was so humble and understanding in his approach to the human outlook. Our last glimpse of evolving mankind was to be of an era when man had transcended his purely physical state with an almost complete spiritual ascendancy, having attained once more that Edenic bliss from which he had fallen so completely unthinkable eons of time ago. "Ao, you look at life through a keyhole," Azeros had said, in his apartment way of putting fundamental problems in a nutshell. "You peep at realities through a tiny hole in the wall of materialism, and wonder why you cannot understand what you see. You try and measure that with your senses and analyze it by finite means. What you can measure with your five senses forms but a small waveband on the spectrum of infinity. You observe what your senses tell you and think that that is all. Yet your physicists know that there are many degrees of vibration above and below those to which human senses respond. Have you not got whistles which you cannot hear yet which a dog at a great distance can hear clearly? Have you not got radar telescopes which can see stars through thick fog which can never be visible to the eye? You are learning fast but not so fast as to overcome the inhibitions to which you cling so hard. I ask your pardon for laboring this point, for until it is firmly established there can be no human understanding of what I am trying to present to you. No freedom from the thraldom of time and space, no sense of reality. Ao, you will remember the occasion when we stood, out there in space, and watched the unfoldment of the real, multiple nature of the Earth, How it opened out into progressively rarefied planes of existence, glimpsing for a moment planes which are invisible to the restricted waveband of human vision, but clearly defined and solidly substantial to those who are equipped to dwell therein. That alone is a tremendous step for anyone who had pinned his faith to a geographical universe, a multitude of empty worlds spinning in empty space. Now you know that empty space is a misnomer. There is no such thing as a vacuum in the fullness of creation. Ayo, the denser these planes become, as they cling close to the hard core of the physical expression of a planet or star, the more limited they are in expression, but the rarer they become, the more tenuous their consistency, the more do they expand until they draw near to mergence into infinity, so that the whole of creation, on that level, tends to become a great unity. That is an idea that must be pondered over and allowed to sink into the consciousness before it can become acceptable to most. Yet if once it can be encompassed, it will be found to provide a background to your thinking which will unlock many doors and help you to realize why humanity is a unity too. I felt that any comment was uncalled for. And my mind was busy trying to relate this difficult concept to what I knew and understood of creation. To see before me, as I had been privileged to do, realms within realms, separated from each other by different rates of vibration, yet all forming a comprehensive whole, was one thing. But to absorb the transcendent fact within my intellect so that I could write about it convincingly, was something quite different. I trembled for the fate of my book. A sudden thought made me catch my breath. Perhaps it was some magic on Zero's part. But in a flash I had a realization of what God meant. All this variegated expanse of creation was God in action. This is what he really was, at least that aspect of God which a finite mind could grasp. In the whole wide universe there was nothing else but God, his expression as tenuous matter, as solid density, as fine intelligence, was the reality of the whole of creation. Anything else must therefore be unreal, illusory. Figments of human acceptance which had been manifested into form by the defiance of man's will. Oh, for the pen of a genius to express in words all that came to me in that blinding flash of illumination. All this great expanse in which I had traveled with my beloved mentor, crossing the boundaries of time again and again, was the creation of love, a work of love. Nevermore could I see evil in any created thing without recalling that the distortion was the work of man and not that of God. Obviously there could be no particular point at which to look for God. He is omnipresent, whether manifest or not. He is in all places at all times, knowing all because it is all part of himself, all powerful because there could not possibly be anything that was outside of him. There could be no way of hiding from him except in the illusion that one was apart from him. Just like the sunshine in shadow, you withdraw into the shade for relief from the heat of the sun, but the shade has no real existence of its own. Throughout this narrative I have tried to make this a fundamental point, but this was the moment when its realization forced itself upon me. In the face of this shining thought, all conceptions of historic experience faded into the background. Man's fall from grace and his long story of redemption was set, like a single sequence, in the endless stride of eternity. All ideas of physical reality and permanence became ephemeral, fading into something terribly near illusion, real only in specific episodes for those attuned to such vibrations, a passing interlude in the story of creation. For in this background of shining ultimation, if such a word is applicable, covering all of space, absorbing time within itself, freed from the trammels of geography, was the real life, the real home of the spirit of man. In this glorious environment he had his place and his identity, part of a transcendent whole. From here his consciousness is projected into experience. From here he fell into the mists of his own gathering because he thought of the possibility of separation from all this wonder, and thus created the environment in which he still struggles for existence, ignorant that he cannot cease to exist even if he desires to do so. During his travels, in deepest and bitterest experience, even when his soul is darkened beyond recognition, his spirit has not stirred one iota in space. It is still there, in the highest heaven, connected with his busy experimenting soul and mind by a silver cord that he himself cannot break. For his spirit is part of God and cannot be separated from that with which it is integrated. The soul of man is on its way back to the spirit of God. I do not know what broke my reverie, nor to what extent Zeros had continued to invade my consciousness with his illuminating thoughts, but when I came back to human consciousness he was gone. But in his place was a wonderful golden glow which even my physical eyes could perceive.